This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
There was a very wealthy man who had a very beautiful and righteous daughter. The only problem with his daughter was that she couldn't keep a husband for very long. She used to get married, and after the first night of the shidduch, after the first night of the chasana, she was no longer married. The husband used to die. It happened once, happened twice, happened three times. After that, she decided this is no good, to have the blood of so many men on her head. She would rather not get married. She would remain a living widow. And she was very miserable and very upset, but what could she do? This wealthy man had in another country a very, very poor brother who had 10 children. And this family used to support itself by going into the forest every day and bringing bundles of wood and selling the wood, and that used to be their day's income. And one day they couldn't find any buyers for their wood, so they had nothing to eat that day. They went into the forest, as was their custom, to try and again. And the sun was crying, and he suddenly thought of an idea, and he asked his parents' permission to leave them and to go and visit his wealthy uncle in this other country. If you want to come through there, then if you want to come through there, see from this side of the mechitza. And off he went to the wealthy uncle, who was very glad to see him. He'd never met those children from his nephews. He was very thrilled to see the young man, and his wife was thrilled, and so was the daughter. After 7 days, he approached his uncle, and he said, "I want to make a request from you, but you've got to swear to me first that you will grant my request." Uncle said, "Sure." And the young cousin said, "I would like to marry your daughter." So he said, "Please, not that. Because of my sins, she's got a strange quality that her husbands don't last very long. And I wouldn't like to see a nice young man like you come to such an end, so take my advice and don't marry her." The young man insisted. He said, "Look, if it's money you're after, I'll give you the money without your marrying her. You don't have to marry her. I'll pay you as much as you would if you were my son-in-law, as I would if you were my son-in-law, and don't marry her." And he said, "No," he wasn't prepared to accept that. He insisted on marrying her, and he said, "You promised, you're under oath to do whatever I've asked you to do." The father had no way out, so he agreed. And the daughter was very distressed. She didn't want another death on her hands. And he married her, and they made a party. And at the chuppah before the party, Eliyahu HaNavi appeared to the chosan and said, "Listen to what I'm going to tell you, and don't deviate from it at all. When you're sitting at the party, a very poor man is going to come up to you in black clothes, very torn, a man in such poverty, in a state of such poverty such as you've never ever seen before. When you see him, invite him up to the main table, make a place next to you for him, and serve him with all sorts of delicious foods and drinks. Just take good care of him, and things will be all right." And they sat down at the party, and this man appeared, terribly poor, torn clothes, black, comes up to the chosan. The chosan invites him up to the main table, and he serves him with food and drink and makes a big fuss of him. As the evening wears on, this poor visitor calls the chosan aside and says to him, "Let me introduce myself to you. I'm an angel. I come from the Ribbono Shel Olam. And my job is to take your life. Time's up. This is the time for you to go, and I've come to take you." Says the young man, "Right, my time is up, okay, but I've just gotten married. Give me a year, come back in a year's time." He said, "No." He said, "Give me a month, give me a week, let's finish Sheva Brachos." Malach HaMavi says, "No, your time has come. Not even a day can I give you. Today is the day." So he said, "All right, let me just go and say goodbye to my wife, at least that." Off he goes to his caliph, and she sees there's something wrong. She says, "What's the matter?" He says, "I've come to say goodbye to you. What eventually happens to everybody is about to happen to me." So she said, is that man that he was the Malach HaMoviz? He says, yes, he's come to take me. So she says to her husband, to her chosen, no ways, you stay here, and I'll go and deal with the Malach HaMoviz. And off she goes, she's got experience already. Off she goes, and she tells the Malach HaMoviz, this is no deal, my husband's not going today. And you can't do this kind of thing, because it says when a man gets married, the first year he's got to stay at home with his wife, he's got to be Masameach his wife. And if you take my husband on the first day of our marriage, you're making a mockery of the Torah. And if you listen to me, that's fine, you can go. And if you don't want to listen to me, come with me to the Beis Din HaGadol, come with me to the Ribono Shel Olam's Beis Din, and we'll let him decide who's right, you or me. Hashem accepted her claim and shouted at the Malach HaMoviz, chased him away, and they lived happily ever after. That basically is the story. What's amazing here is that this woman had the ability to challenge the Malach HaMoviz. When we look at the extent of the ability of the human being, it's quite incredible how far he can go. We think of it technologically. We often think of technologically how far man has come, what man is capable of achieving. And we wonder what more man could achieve. Would we have thought 100 years ago that man could go to the moon? Would we have thought 100 years ago that one could fly from London to New York in 3 hours? Would these things have been conceivable? Would one have thought of the power of computer technology? Would one have thought of the developments in the fields of medicine 50 years ago, 60 years ago, 30 years ago? It's mind-boggling when one thinks how far man has come, what man is capable of. And one asks oneself, what is the limit? Where is the point at which man is no longer capable? And there doesn't appear to be a limit. Records are constantly being broken, new concepts are being developed, new technology is being developed, barriers are being broken over and over again. Every day, we're breaking new barriers. One buys a piece of equipment, and you know within a few months it's going to be outdated. And that period is just becoming shorter and shorter and shorter, and the extent to which it's outdated. Used to be you bought a piece of equipment, and 5 years later it's a little bit outdated. Now you buy a piece of equipment, and 2 weeks later it's totally outdated. And it's just going faster and faster and faster. And one wonders, where is the limit? Where, how far can man go? And here we see, a woman has the ability to challenge the Malach HaMoviz, to challenge the Angel of Death, and to come out victorious, to be able to be successful. But we can even challenge death. We have a case of that also, in this week's Sedra, where the Yalkut brings the Medrash, Vayedaber Hashem el Moshe be'etzem hayom hazeh. Hashem spoke to Moshe in the middle of this day. Says the Medrash, B'shloisha mekoymus ne'ama be'etzem hayom hazeh. There are 3 places in the Torah where that phrase is used, in the midst of this day. Ne'ama be'noach. The first case was with Noach. Be'etzem hayom hazeh bo'noach. In the middle of that day, Noach came into the ark. What does it mean? L'fisha hu yudoyla oimlim mikach v'kach imonu margishim bo yenu namanichim usu. The generation used to say, if we just get a hint of the fact that Noach is ready to go into the ark, we will not allow it, we'll hold him back. Not only that, we're going to take axes and picks and we're going to destroy the ark. He's not going to have to go into the ark secretly when nobody is looking. In the middle of the day, I'm going to take him into the ark. Anybody who thinks he can interfere with me, let him come and try and interfere. I have no fear. I'm going to take Noach into the ark in front of everybody. Second time this appears in Mitzrayim, when Hashem says, in the midst of this day, I will take them out of Egypt. If we feel that Bnei Yisrael are ready to leave Mitzrayim, we'll stop them. We won't allow them to. We'll take swords and spears and we'll kill them. I'm going to take them out in the middle of the day in front of everybody. And anybody who wants to interfere, let him come and try and interfere. So what about this one? How does this one fit in? In the middle of the day, Hashem is going to take Moshe's life. V'tisho yu Yisrael imim b'kach b'kach. Yisrael used to say, "Manu margishim bo, if we feel that Moshe is about to die, ain't anu menichin es, we won't allow him to." Odom shi'tzionim in Mitzrayim, v'korol lonu es hayom, v'hirid lonu es atzero, v'higid lonu es atzlov, v'hirid lonu es hamon, v'osol lonu nisim u'gvuris. The man who took us out of Egypt and split the sea and brought the Torah and the Slav and the man and did all these miracles and wonders. Ain't anu menichin es, so we're not prepared to let him die. We won't allow it. Said Hashem, I will take him into the cave in the middle of the day. Whoever wants to interfere may come and interfere. First two cases are relatively easy to understand. Those are physical events in which, under normal circumstances, the population could have interfered physically. Moshe is going into the mass, going into the Teva, the generation aren't going to allow him. They could have physically got themselves together and created a barrier and stopped him from going into the table. That could have been done. The Bnei Yisrael are about to leave Mitzrayim. The Mitzrayim could have stopped them going, could have stopped them leaving. But the third one doesn't fit. What does it mean that in both of those first two cases Hashem performs a miracle? Supernaturally Hashem does. By all natural means, these two people could have been stopped from doing their duties. Noach could have been stopped and should have been stopped by the people if we follow the natural course of events. And Bnei Israel should have been prevented from leaving Mitzrayim had we followed the normal course of events. The Mitzrayim were powerful, the Bnei Israel had no power. Noach was one man, the whole generation was against him. So by the normal laws of normal cause and effect, with this enormous population ready to stop the small minority from doing what it wants to do, there should have been no problem. Hashem makes a miracle, supernaturally. Noach gets into the Teva, and Bnei Yisrael leave Mitzrayim. It is considered by this Medrash as supernatural that Hashem could take Moshe's life when Bnei Yisrael didn't want it. That was against nature. Naturally, Bnei Yisrael could have stopped Moshe from dying. It required a mess, it required a miracle for Moshe to die despite the will of the people. We have another case where human beings can challenge the Malach HaMoris. Where human beings can challenge even death and have within themselves the power to hold a man back from dying. We have a case with Rebbe. Rebbe was dying and he was suffering because they were calling him up in heaven and his Talmidim were praying for him down here and he was torn in two. But as long as they prayed for him, he didn't die. The tefillah had to stop before Rebbe could die. That means the people had the capacity to hold him back. Only after they stopped davening did he die. So human beings are capable of great things. There is a Gemara in the Dorim. It says the following. And that's Lamed Ches Amud Aleph. Omer Rabbi Yosi b'Rabbi Chanina. Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina said, "Lo nisno tzeiro ela lo Moshe ulo Zavri." Omer Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan said, "Ein Hakadosh Baruch Hu mashre shchinosoi elo al gibor veoshir vechochom v'onah." The Shchino, the Ribono Shlom, allows his presence to rest only on a person who has four qualities: he must be a gibor, he must be powerful, he must be wealthy, he must be rich, he must be wise, and he must be modest. Those are the four qualities a person needs for the Shekhinah to rest on him. The Chulon mi Moshe, and we learn it all from Moshe. Gibor, how do we know that Moshe was strong, that he had power? Dichtiv, because it says, by Yifreses ha'ohel ala Mishkan. Moshe spread the oil over the Mishkan. Over the Mishkan he spread the cloths. V'omamar, Moshe Rabbeinu Pirsoi. And we learned in the Brass it was Moshe himself who did it single-handedly. And there we see that Moshe must have had enormous stature and have been very strong. Asks the Rosh, Teimo, Amai lo yolit mikroshim. That he put the curtains over, that he put these drapes over the Mishkan. That's very nice, he must have been strong, but he did something even more than that. He actually put the beams in place. And nobody else could do that. Surely from there we should learn how strong Moshe Rabbeinu was. Says the Maharsho, sure he doesn't understand the Rosh's question. Because we learn that that was done by itself. Moshe only appeared to be putting the Kroshim together. It was miraculously put together. And Moshe stood there with his hands and it all happened by itself. So what kind of proof would there have been from the Kroshim, says the Maharsha, that Moshe was strong? There's proof from there that he's a tzaddik, that this thing were performed for him. But there's no proof from there that he's a strong man, that he was a powerful man. So what is the Rosh asking? That's a very strong kasher of the Maharsha and the Rosh. The Chaim Shmuel Levitz answers, explains the Rosh with a principle that he uses over and over again. The principle is that that miracle doesn't mean that Moshe stood there doing nothing. That miracle only took place after Moshe used all his efforts. When Moshe used all his effort, he couldn't rely on the miracle. So Moshe, an old man, had to come and put these beams together. When he was trying to put them together and using all his efforts to try and do so, nothing happened, that's when the miracle took place. But until he did that, there was no miracle. Like the Bnei Yisrael gave into the Red Sea. Until they actually went into the Red Sea and the water was up to their mouths, the sea didn't split. The miracles start only when the individual has exhausted all of his efforts and still is unable to achieve, then the miracle takes over. But until that point where the human being has exhausted all his efforts, there isn't even the beginning of a miracle. And so says the Chaim Shmuel Levitz, by the fact that that miracle took place, you see that Moshe used all his purpose, he used all his efforts to try and put this Mishkan together. And a gibber, the Chaim Shmuel Levitz defines, that's very relative, strong. What is a strong person? A strong person is a person who knows how to utilize all his forces, all his powers, all his strength. That's a gibber. Some have more strength, some have less strength, but what's important is not how much you've got, what's important is how much of what you've got you're using. It applies in all areas. You know, they say that we use something like 3% of our concentration ability, and a genius uses 5, 6, 7, maybe 8%. So how much intelligence a human being has got is totally irrelevant, because even a human being who only has a third of the intelligence of other people, if he would use a greater percentage, would be much cleverer. We're using so little of our purpose that how much we've got is not relevant. We've got so much more than we use. Even a weak person has got so much untapped energy in all areas that it's irrelevant how much energy one has. All that's relevant is how much energy one's using. Because if instead of using 5% of our energy, we would use 25% of our energy, then even a person with little energy could achieve enormous things. So a gibber, says the Chaim Shmuel Levitz, is not a person who has great strength. A gibber is somebody who uses all the strength he's got, who knows how to use every capacity of his body and soul, of his personality and his being, to achieve that which has to be achieved. He brings another proof from that, from Medrash and Emor, Parshas Chavos, at the end where it says, HaKohen HaGodol Me'echov. Lama Nikro Shemo Kohen Godol. Why is the Kohen Godol called the Kohen Godol? Right? The great Kohen. Says the Medrash, who Godol behaved Vorim, because he's greater than his brothers, the other Kohanim, in five areas. It's not just a title, a meaningless title, Kohen Godol. Kohen Godol means the great Kohen, and he has to be great in five areas. And he has to excel in these five areas. What are the five? The Chochmah. He has to be great in wisdom. B'koyach, strength. B'noi, appearance. He has to have hadrasponim. B'osher, wealth. U'v'shonim, and maturity. B'koyach, the Medrash now shows, where do we see the strength? Shu gibur, it's got to be strong. B'orei, Aaron kishahinif es halavim. When Aaron did the wave offerings for the Levim, every Levi had to bring an offering. And the Kohen had to wave them. Wave them is like this, all the way up and down, left and right. Each korban had to be moved in that way. How many korbanos did he have to do? Chaf Beis Elif, 22,000. Aaron HaKohen had to wave 22,000 korbanos. A Yom Echad, and it was on one day. So the Chaim Shmuel Levitz calculates, which is right, that if one day means 24 hours, which is unlikely, then he had to do about four of them a minute. For 24 hours he had to stand and do four korbanos a minute. If it meant a 12-hour period, if it meant a Yom Echad meant a 12-hour period, then he had to do eight of them in a minute. For 12 hours, non-stop. Ketzer the Yom Anifim, Melech the Melech, up and down, Melech the Melech, forward and backwards, up and down. Avishai Yod Godol B'Kach, you see how strong he was. asks Rav Chaim Shmuel Levitz, the Chizkuni points out that this is not humanly possible. For a man to stand and do that 24 hours, heavy, this is talking about a korban, he's taking a heavy object for 24 hours non-stop to do this waving, it's not possible. So the Chizkuni says it was a miracle. Asks Rav Chaim Shmuel Levitz, if it's a miracle, what's the proof from here that he was strong? Back to the same thing. How can you bring a raya from this sort of strong? It's not possible that he used his strength to achieve this. It must have been with special siyata dishmaya. If it's special siyata dishmaya, you don't have to be strong, that even a weakling can do it. Says Rav Chaim Shmuel Levitz, but according to his definition of strength, one understands the medrash. Strength is not a man who has enormous quantities of potential. Strength is a man who uses all the potential he has. And the nes would only begin to take place when a man has exhausted all his potential. When he's used all the koiches he's got and he still needs to do the job and the job is undone, then the Ribbono Shel'olam interferes. Then the Ribbono Shel'olam takes over and he helps. That's how it works with nisim. That's why miracles don't happen to us. That's one of the reasons that miracles don't happen to us. The Ribbono Shel'olam feels no responsibility to help us out before we've used all the koiches we've got. He's given us koiches. How can we draw on extra divine help when we've still got untapped resources of our own? When we will have used all of our resources, then the Ribbono Shel'olam will give us additional resources, then he'll take over the job. From here we see the extent to which the human being is capable of achieving things. What is it that enables a human being to achieve these enormous ends? Rav Chaim Shmuel Levitz works along the line that the Chazal, the Tapaseach, Pesach, the Chaveiro, Chayev Le'Nafsho. The person opens his home to his friend, for that you owe him your life. There's no way that debt can be repaid. And the Medrash brings riyas for that. And some of the riyas that it brings is from Elisha and Eliyahu. The two cases we've got of people reviving the dead were Elisha and Eliyahu. But it wasn't a random case of this happened to revive any old person who died. If they had this power to revive the dead, why didn't the Chevra Kedisha should have employed them full time? As people died, they should have called in Eliyahu and Elisha to revive them. Imagine what the world would have been. The hospital should have called them, the medical people should have called them. Imagine what that would have been worth to have Eliyahu and Elisha working, Eliyahu or Elisha working for you. But it didn't work that way. In both cases, Eliyahu and Elisha, the person they revived was the child of the hosts of the people that they were staying with. That's what's unique about that. Because of Chaim Shmuel Levitz, they would never have been able to revive anybody else. The debt of gratitude is so great that that enabled them to use those resources to revive the dead. Likewise, here in this medrash that we had in our Sedra, the debt of gratitude that Bnei Yisrael felt for Moshe Rabbeinu enabled them to withhold his death, to stop the Ribbono Shel'olam from taking his life. We need to understand that a little bit more clearly. There is a completely different attitude that we adopt when we're doing something which we feel it would be nice to be able to do. It's like an extra thing when we're doing something which we know just has to be done. Completely different attitude. When you have a job of work which you know just has to be done, and if it isn't going to be done, it's serious, it just has to be done, we're able to find within ourselves resources that we don't otherwise have. And that's why sometimes we look at other people and we think, gee, how do they have the resources to handle this? How do they have it? In their position, I couldn't do it. But one knows that if one is in the position, one does do it. It's quite unbelievable how much we can cope with and how much we can achieve when we're put into that position, when we have to, when we have no choice. What we can do when we're struggling for our lives, when we're struggling for survival, what we're able to do. And yet we can't picture that ability when we don't see it as a struggle for survival. When we see ourselves as having a duty, but a duty with a real understanding of what the word duty means. Duty is not something I'm supposed to do, and if I don't do it, somebody else will do it. But we feel what a duty really is, that this is something that has to be done, and it has to be done by me, and it has to be done by me now. That's how it has to be. There is nobody else. That's what the job is. Then one finds the resources. What I'm trying to do is find out what method we can find for ourselves to tap resources which would otherwise be untapped. We see what resources there are. We see how limitless the resources are. And we see how when we've finished our own resources, then the Ribbono Shel'olam takes over and then he does miracles. But we've got to get to that point of using all our resources. What is it in all these cases that give us that understanding of that obligation? Take the case of Aaron having to do with 22,000 korbanos. There could be no substitute. Nobody else could do the job. The job had to be done and it had to be done that day. That was it. Finished. Once you accept the job has to be done and it has to be done today, one finds all sorts of resources. It's the possibility of procrastination which not only causes us to procrastinate, it causes us to entirely not even neglect the job. It causes us not to be able to do the job. The possibility of procrastination actually deprives us of the ability to call on our resources. Because if there's an opportunity for procrastination, there's not an impelling force, there's not an absolute urgency. I can get away without doing it. The moment I think to myself I can get away without doing it, then the resources on which I will draw will be just the most superficial of resources. When you can't get away without doing it, it's a different story. If I take you out a kilometer or two off the shore and I say, how would you like to swim to the coast? You're likely to say, I can't. I'm not fit enough. And if I say, try, I'll come along on the boat with you, and if you don't make it, I'll pull you up, and you'll come in the boat. You'll try, you'll probably do 100 yards, 200 yards, and that will be it, you'll call for the boat. And yet if you were dropped there and there was no boat, you would be able to do it. What is the difference? Do you have the courage or don't you have the courage? The answer is everybody has the courage. That's not the problem. The only problem is, do I have the ability to draw on my deep resources or not? The ability to draw on deep resources depends only on one thing, and that is the extent to which I see this as a duty, as an obligation. I have to do it. I have no choice. I have no choice, I do it. Aaron HaKohen knew that one day 22,000 korbanos had to be done. So he said about doing it. It's not possible. That doesn't bother him that it's not possible. He didn't allow the impossibility of the task to create in him the sense that this is no longer a duty. That's another problem that we do. We try and convince ourselves that what we're trying to do is not possible. The moment we're convinced it's not possible, then we can't draw on the resources. You have to develop the ability to say, it's not my business whether it's possible or not. I have to do it. So you can, again, a ship sinks, and you see the coast there on the horizon, and you say to yourself, is it possible for me to get there or not? If you answer to yourself, no, it's not possible for me to get there, you'll die, you'll drown where you are. That will be the end of it. But if you say to yourself, I don't know if possible or not possible, I only know one thing, I've got to go. I've got to swim. I've got to make it. And you set yourself going, then not only do you find that you're able to find resources which you didn't know you had, but then this thing can take place, then miracles can take place. The moment you're going to regard it as impossible, it's not going to be impossible. So we are the people who define, the subject defines whether the task is possible or not. We define. It's not objective circumstances. There's no limit to what a human being can do. Just as we said in the beginning, would we have thought that it was possible 30 years ago, 50 years ago, to achieve technologically what we're doing now? Had we set ourselves out, try and get to the moon, what would we have said? Not possible. Not possible, and we wouldn't try. But it doesn't work like that. Once we realize that whether it's possible or not is not our business. Possible or not possible, that there can be miracles, there can be all sorts of things that will make it achievable at the end. All I know is, I've got to go, I've got to try, I've got to move in that direction, I've got to exert the energy because nobody else will do it. That's my mission, that's my job. Then it gets done. And so Aaron HaKohen sets off on that day to perform the impossible. To wave 22,000 korbanos in one day, which is not possible. But he sets out doing it because there's nobody else who can do it and it has to be done. So what we've got to determine in our minds is not the possibility of achieving our ends. What we've got to determine in our minds is the obligation to achieve those ends. That's all. If we know that there's an obligation to do it, we forget about the possibility and it gets done. And so it is with Moshe Rabbeinu putting up the Kroshim, putting up the Mishkan. Everybody else tried, they couldn't do. Moshe knew it was humanly impossible to do. So he didn't stand there and daven. Didn't stand there and pray. He put together, he used every ounce of energy he had. And the Mishkan stood up by itself. The Ribbono Shel Olam achieves the results. We must not be overtaken by arrogance in thinking that our efforts are what achieve the results. The results are miraculous always. It's just that God is not prepared to perform miracles until we've done our bit. And our bit means using everything we've had. And once we understand that principle, we start living with miracles, and we start understanding that there is no such thing as impossible. If it's an obligation to do, if this is something I need to do, then there's no such thing as it can't be done. Because I live with miracles, I believe in miracles. Provided I've used all my kochos, provided I've used everything I have to try and achieve it. And so it is with the Bnei Yisrael and Moshe Rabbeinu. In the time of Noach, they wanted to stop Noach going into the ark, and they could have stopped Noach going into the ark. Miracle didn't happen. The Mitzrayim wanted to stop the Bnei Yisrael leaving Mitzrayim, and they could have stopped the Bnei Yisrael leaving Mitzrayim. Miracle, they didn't. Bnei Yisrael wanted to stop Moshe from dying, and they could have stopped Moshe from dying. What is it that gave them that sense? Because their sense of indebtedness was so enormous. Odom Sheitzionim in Mitzrayim, the man who took us out of Mitzrayim, the Korol on earth Hayom, and he split the sea, the Hurid on earth Atero, and brought us the Tero, the Higiz on earth Aslov, and he brought the quails, the Hurid on earth Hamon, and he brought the Mon, the Otsalon and Nisim Ugvelis, Ein Onom and Ichilis, so we will not let him die. That was the way they saw their responsibility to him. We cannot let him die. We cannot live without this man. We need this man. It's not a question of do we have it within our capacity to stop him from dying. They acknowledge that the human being can do anything. There's nothing the human being cannot achieve if he uses all his kochos. And they were prepared to use all their kochos to hold Moshe back, and they would have been able to if it weren't for the Ribbono Shel Olam interfering to Etzem Hayom Hazeh and creating the opportunity for Moshe to die against nature. The natural thing would have been for them to hold him back. And so it is with this young lady who got married for the fourth time. She realized that this man married her out of chesed. Young man comes, her father offers him all the money he wants not to take the risk. And he knows it's a risk. Three women have already died. The halacha is you're not allowed to marry a woman if she's lost three husbands already. And in this case, she lost the three husbands all on the first day, within the first 24 hours. So there's a chazaka that she has this, it's halakhically not allowed. He was willing to risk his life. He was offered money not to marry her. There was no reason to marry her. He could have stayed in the home. He could have lived with the family. He could have married whoever he wanted to. He would have been wealthy and happy. What does he need to marry this girl for? He marries this girl because he realizes she's an aguna. She's a living widow. And this is her only chance. And he's her cousin. He feels that responsibility towards her. She realizes now that this is her last chance. This man has given his life for her. She uses all the resources she's got not to allow his death. She knows from this medrash that a human being can stop anything, even another person dying, if he's prepared to use all his kochos. He's prepared to use all his energy to challenge the Malach HaMavis. It can be done. And she realizes that can be done. And that's something that we need to appreciate. There is no measuring of human capability in terms of measuring the size of the task. The human being is infinite. The human being is a chelek eloko mimal. We have a part of godliness. We have a power of godliness in us. We're motivated and pushed by the Ribbono Shel Olam. We have a neshama from the Ribbono Shel Olam. There is no task that can be measured as being beyond human achievement. If we were just operating as normal human beings without anything else, good, okay, we would have to measure what we're capable of doing and what we're not capable of doing. But there's no such thing. The Ribbono Shel Olam enables us to do things with siyata dishmaya that we wouldn't have thought possible. And the fact is that when we're pushed, we find that we can. How often does it happen? You find a person, you say to him, can you take on a responsibility? There's a job I would like you to do. He says, I'm sorry, I just cannot do it. I'm absolutely full. I haven't got a moment in the day. I would love to help you. I just cannot do it. You find a few weeks later, there's a crisis. His business is in trouble, or maybe there's a family problem or a health problem, and he's got the time, or he manages, pulls himself through, and he's able to pull himself together again. But you said you didn't have the time? We can't measure whether we've got the time or we've got the process. All we know is that we're using a small, small, small percentage of the gift that Ribbono Shel Olam has given us, of the resources that Ribbono Shel Olam has given us. the material resources He's given us, the mental resources He's given us, the physical resources He's given us, the spiritual resources He's given us. We're using such a small part of it that for us to talk about what we can do and what we can't do in terms of measuring the task, that's not how one decides whether to take on a job or not. The way one decides whether to take on a job or not is simply, is this my role? Is this my duty? Is this something I have to do? If it's something I have to do, I'll find the kirkus to do it. There's no question, it has to be done. I'll use all the kirkus I've got, and when I run out of kirkus, the Ribbono Shel Olam will help me, if it's something I have to do. If it's not something I have to do, then let's not waste time. So the examination, the analysis we have to undergo is not by focusing on the task. How big is the job? How big is the job is irrelevant. Because how big any job is, it's nowhere near as big as us. We're far bigger than any task that can possibly be put up in our way. We're able to do it. The test is this my job? Is this the way I'm meant to be spending my time? Is this what I'm supposed to be doing? If it is, if this is my duty, then I have to understand that there's nothing that can stop me. I've got to use those kirkus, even if it means challenging the Malach HaMoves, as that girl did in the Medrash, or as B'nai Yisrael wanted to do in the Medrash on the Sedra, even if it means prolonging life against the decree of the Ribbono Shel Olam, even that we can do with the right motivation. And so we find ourselves now, right after Rosh Hashanah, where the Ribbono Shel Olam has decreed what kind of a year we're going to have. And if we're honest with ourselves, and we imagine to ourselves what kind of a year He's decreed, bearing in mind He's a God of justice, but Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't play games, and He doesn't forgo and forgive and ignore. Everything has to be paid for. If we look at ourselves honestly, we can't be too impressed with the kind of year that's going to lie ahead. And the Aseres Yemei is given to us to change all that. It's within our ability to actually change what has been decreed, that a whole year of mistakes and missed opportunities can be rectified in a few days of redirection. So that's unbelievable. A human being challenged the Ribbono Shel Olam. God the judge, even a human judge, once he's given his judgment, what chance do you have? You can go to appeal, and when the appeal court has given its judgment, then what? Then nothing. Can't be challenged. But the Ribbono Shel Olam has given the human being unlimited powers, unlimited kirchus. If we understand that that's our job during this period of time, that's our role, is to change that behavior, to actually bring the Ribbono Shel Olam to his knees, so to say, to actually force him into changing the behavior. That's what he wants from us. Just as she challenged the Malach HaMoves, just as Bnei Yisrael wanted to challenge the Malach HaMoves. If the Malach HaMoves was sent, then he was sent by the Ribbono Shel Olam. And he was sent because the Ribbono Shel Olam decreed that that young man's life had terminated. It was the end of his life. She was able to change that behavior. There's no end to what the human being can achieve if he'll use all the kirkus, having defined the job, not in terms of how big it is, but how urgent it is. And if we accept and acknowledge the urgency of the tasks that lie ahead of us, we will find within our souls the most unbelievable resources. And if it should so happen that we run out of resources, then the Ribbono Shel Olam will step in miraculously to ensure that our achievements are far greater than anything we could have imagined.